Hello and welcome to the OM podcast, Outwear Mobile's podcast, all about the mobile industry. My name is Michael Dalich and I think the unthinkable has happened. I've been called up from the Bush League or the Amateur League or one of those incarnations and have been asked to be your host for what I think is going to be a pretty exciting episode. For those listeners who are recurring, you may remember that we recently had a chat about the role of an app or where it lives in an organization and who owns it and how does digital play into this bigger picture. And today we're going to be continuing that discussion. So we welcomed back two people who were part of that initial conversation, Ruben and Rob.
Hey.
Hello. Hey, gang.
You guys well?
I'm very good. Thank you. I'm excited to be here, Michael.
That's Ruben for those playing at home and Rob.
Yeah, tickety-boo, thank you.
The guy making weird noises and words, that's Rob. So last time we spoke, Ruben and Rob, we got a chance to take an outside looking in perspective from an external perspective. We made some assumptions of how we thought things worked and how they should work. And we thought today might be a good opportunity to get someone in who actually knows what they're talking about. So with that, I'd like to welcome Jason O'Donnell, who is the Digital Program Manager for Village Roadshow. Jason, welcome.
Hi there. Thanks for having me along.
So you listened to our last podcast. How did we go? Did you think these guys have got it so wrong that I need to come on and actually tell them how it is?
Not quite. The funny thing about podcasts is that sometimes it's a medium that you wish you could interject and offer your own, you know, perspective. Some podcasts have a live chat function, which I've taken advantage of at times to try to get my point across. It can be frustrating. Last time, I think you guys were pretty spot on, but obviously every company is different.
You know,
companies are controlled by cultures and personalities at the top that decide how things should be run. So
I'm lucky there wasn't a live chat function on the podcast because I think it was my second podcast. So I was quite nervous.
I think we called it your second and last at that point as well.
So. But I'm back. I'm back in. I just want to make a statement here actually. Jason has an Apple Watch at the moment and the rest of the team members here don't have Apple Watch on their wrist. It's confusing. We're an app development company. How come Jason's got one?
He's leading us. These guys from digital. So that's actually a somewhat of a good segue. So we're going to try today to not just pepper you with questions and keep it to more of a conversation, but it might be worth starting off with a bit of an introduction to yourself and what you do at Village Roadshow and the day in the life of.
Sure. Well, I've been at Village Roadshow for what feels like a very long time, 12 years now. My role there has changed from, I guess, technology project management. I've done work for our movie production business, for our cinemas in the US and here locally and in Asia, and our theme park business. So I've managed to touch, hopefully positively, every part of the business so far. And in the last year and a half, I've been part of an internal startup called our digital team. Within the team, we have product management, project management, and analytics practices that we go out and we consult to the various divisions. And if they don't have a digital program in place, we assist them to start looking at our customer experience through product management. If they do, we tend to leave them alone. If they like help, then we'll certainly provide that as well. And the second function, I guess, is for us to look at ways to innovate our customer experience through the digital touch points we have or create new digital touch points. Obviously, the movie business is changing and it's under a lot of pressure from customer, customer expectations of the availability of content and price of content. Mm. So it's going to be an interesting few years ahead of us.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you have been set up as an internal startup, and I think that's something that we mentioned briefly last time, more around internal think tanks or internal labs. How has that been different in terms of how you structure yourself and how you go about doing your work as opposed to a more traditional department within the business?
Right. Well, I guess one of the biggest benefits we've had is, it's twofold really. One, we've been able to, write our own story. So concentrate on the things that we think either we've internally identified or through the use of external consultants identified as being something that needs fixing or something we're not doing.
Can you talk about some of those things?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we just simply using analytics, we can work out just what the usability of our sites are like. We don't need degrees in marketing to understand how our the feedback that we receive via social, for instance, how that is a picture of what our users are experiencing via those touch points. But we have to be very careful because at a company like Village Redshirt, no different from a bank or, you know, an insurance firm, people have put their heart and souls into those websites at some point. Unfortunately, often when a website is developed internally, it's pretty much the business case is owned by an IT department, and it's done in a way that is paid for via capital expenditure. So once people throw down $500,000 or $1 million at a website, they really don't expect to spend any more money on it for about 3 years.
Yeah.
Right. So along
come
us.
It's a pipe dream anyway.
That's right. Yeah. So along come us up starts explaining that web development is an iterative process, that it should be something that is, you know, constantly evolving for customer expectation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, culturally it's been a fun experience.
Yeah, sure.
And somewhat confronting for some of our businesses.
So with digital, I mean, inevitably all these initiatives always bundle up into something, a new product, whether it be a website or an app or whatever it might be. With your team's makeup, how much of that team is really technical software focused and development focused, as opposed to a UX CX focus, as opposed to a business analyst focus? How do you determine what that team should be and where their boundaries of responsibility stop?
Right. I guess for us, it was a case of working out what the tolerances were out in the business would be for that type of involvement. We determined in the first, we broke up our business plan into a crawl, walk, run phase. We're still really in crawl, and we may remain in crawl for another year or two, but really in that crawl phase, we were there basically to build up a BA skill set and product management skill set that helped us create some product backlog items for our various businesses and help try to inject the idea of iterative process out there. In some cases, it's a case of us encouraging the businesses to build a new e-commerce department or to build up skill sets internally so that they bridged a gap between pure IT sort of development work and front-end skills, so that they could at the very least be able to mock up or prototype things and changes that they could, you know, then pass over.
I read an article recently that said that IT was the engine and digital was the driving experience. Do you have that view, and does the rest of the team or the business units have that view? I guess you would have a lot of resistance when you go and approach different business units. So that view might be skewed.
Look, it's another one of those one of those stories that will be different for every company. My personal view is that there's a movement towards a decentralization of IT. So, you know, with a commoditization of technology, we have people, business leaders that are joining the company now in their early 30s that have very high expectations of a consumer quality to their information technology deliverables internally, whether that be the computer that's on their desk or the quality of the wireless that they have in the office. Those people come to us with a very sophisticated expectation of technology, but also in many cases an expectation that they should own certain parts of the customer experience and not hand those over to a centralized, you know, IT group. So what I guess the question then is, well, what is IT there for? And for me, I think the core pieces are things like environment and platforms, security practices, and certainly, you know, development needs where they have the capability to deliver those.
So I think the trend you alluded to is really accurate in the sense that IT traditionally was seen as almost you were the IT's customer, so to speak. You came to with my business unit needs this new application to do this thing, go work out what the right one should be, implement it, and give it back to me in a time frame that I dictate, in probably a budget that I dictate as well. And it slowly evolved into this sort of IT business partner model where you have IT people working within specific departments for that department. It seems like digital has now evolved, and digital has now sort of come to this this point where it is not within each individual department. It's almost where IT departments were not way back when they were purely just, you know, quite transactional, but quite in that consultative phase. Do you see that's where it is right now? And do you foresee that, for example, each individual business unit in the future might have digital people embedded in there, or do you always see it envisioning as a department?
Yeah, well, I absolutely think that's a good description of what's happening at Village Roadshow.
Yeah.
The digital team is here at the moment to drive innovation and have people thinking or viewing digital as something that's central to their future marketing teams. Will we always exist as we are at the moment? Possibly not. We may actually be absorbed in some way into the divisions. So I think that the perfect future state for Village Roadshow is for each of those divisions to have digital practices within their marketing teams. Totally.
And that's an interesting point, and it comes back to our last podcast when we talked about where does that app live and who owns that app within a company. And I guess as that department is thinking of innovative ideas and products and services, and you develop an app, is that app maintained by your department, or is it then passed on to the relevant business unit to then take care of it?
Yeah, it's a good question. I believe, so my personal position on this is that whoever is responsible for the relationship with the customer should be the owner of the app, okay?
That's a good point.
Now, in some cases, those divisions or businesses may not have the internal capability to own and maintain the technical complexities of an app.
So. Well, I was just going to ask to jump in. Do you think some of those departments are always resourced up to understand the customer needs at the end of the line?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think the answer is in most cases, no.
Yep.
Again, I'm thinking just from our perspective.
Sure.
I think perfect state, then each of these businesses look at their I don't want to talk about revenue so much, but they look at the revenue that's involved in a digital line of business and appropriately resource it according to that revenue line. A good example of traditional businesses that were, say, bricks and mortar and received cash over the counter, right? 10 years ago, they probably saw websites as being just an addition to that, a side business just to keep the online world, those nerds that are using the internet, happy. But that's not the reality anymore in most cases. I can say personally, in personal experience, some of our business derive 60, 70, 80% of their revenue online. Then you need to treat those things.
You might say those same individuals are the only ones going to the movie stores sometimes now, you know.
Yeah, it's quite possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just on the subject of nerds, I think that culturally one of the biggest barriers we have to having business units adopt the idea of owning a digital practice internally is that idea that anything that plugs into the wall is a domain of a nerd. And I'm not a nerd. You know, in fact, in many cases, a lot of these department heads, and now I'm not talking with experience because I don't want to name anyone at Project, but you know, so many people like to put a badge of a Luddite on their shirt and actually hold it up as a source of pride.
Yep.
Right. But that's not really the case now.
That's right.
In fact, you know, anyone that says that they don't know how to use a smartphone, or they have trouble with a tablet, or why would they own an app for their product or service? Yeah, that raises an eyebrow and you wonder what.
Yeah. Yeah. I always think if my dad, who the only thing he can do is turn a computer on and off, and he holds that as a point of pride, can use a smartphone, then there's not really anyone out in the world who can't do something with it if it's made simple enough for them. So your department's going around talking to these business units, pointing out potential holes or flaws or things that they could do better to put a positive spin on it. What sort of roadblocks are you hitting, or sort of feedback are you receiving from these teams, sort of telling them how to suck eggs, so to speak?
Well, as I mentioned before, I've been at Village a long time.
Some a bit of sway.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say that. But what I do have is a perspective of the way that each of the siloed businesses within the movie industry works. And for a long time, I thought that, wow, you know, this is a frustrating place where, you know, our movie distributor doesn't share, say, marketing content with our cinema business. But it's probably the case elsewhere, right? You know, if you're a biscuit company, I imagine the savoury biscuit people don't talk to the sweet biscuit people.
It's always the case.
All biscuits are good biscuits in my book.
Right, so, you know, I think that the frustrations we've felt in some of the brick walls we received from some of our businesses are mainly around cultural issues, right? These people believe that they're doing a fantastic job, and in many cases they really are. When you take in the constraints of technology in the back end, which I guess probably isn't something the customer, you know, user, people out in the real world will acknowledge or accept or even appreciate, some of those constraints around technology because our industry uses very proprietary systems for what a lot of what they do in the back end. And there aren't very many vendors for those proprietary systems either. So you're kind of
bit
stuck
of a lock-in.
Yeah, you really are.
Yeah.
Other businesses, for instance, our theme parks businesses, when we went to them with a bunch of suggestions and examples and mock-ups of some potential changes they could make, were just overly enthusiastic. You know, they're basically giving us a seat at the table and asking us more. So we've really enjoyed our experience in theme parks, which at the moment has mostly been limited to optimization work.
Yep.
So helping them run multivariate tests and building hypothesis for user experience development.
Right. So it must be quite hard coming from a relatively diversified business then and trying to be an expert in every single one of those businesses can also be difficult. How do you prioritize which business to focus on? Is that something dictated to you, or do you have a chance to throw your two cents in as well?
We do, yeah, absolutely. I think our director, John, has been given a role which basically lets us run our show. We'll prioritize where we look, which pieces we'll look at. And, you know, a lot of our work isn't necessarily divisional based. Some of it is purely selfish work that we're looking at from a corporate perspective. You know, what are the things that we can do about driving the Village Roadshow brand, which really isn't very well known. I mean, people may see the Village Roadshow logo at the start of a movie like Mad Max or The Matrix. And that
insert,
might be
plug
the
only, insert plug here.
Insert plug here. Sorry.
That's okay.
Movies.
That's okay.
Buy them on DVD. I know it's a dying format, but someone's got to support it.
Yeah.
So, Village may not be a very well-known brand. In Victoria, the cinemas are quite well-known. We have some, you know, spread all around the state. But in New South Wales, we may not be known at all. In Queensland, we have our theme parks, which have a Village Roadshow logo. So, on top of all that, we believe that Village Roadshow is a brand that can be responsible for driving people or connecting people with content, because we have, you know, our partnerships with most of the major movie distributors or studios around the world.
Yeah, you're definitely right. When I think of Village, the first thing I think of is the cinemas. And then I actually looked on your website and I'm like, no, they do a lot more. And you've got websites up there that I've never seen before with games and all that sort of stuff. So those type of products, who manages them, or do you find that applications tend to get lost in a big organization like yours?
Well, no, they're very, very clear owners of each of those online properties. Like the story I mentioned before about how traditionally website development, not just at Village, but you know, in my older days in my last business, was seen as something that was kind of begrudgingly necessary, right? It was something that you would spend a whole bunch of money on, often run in a waterfall fashion, and we know waterfall doesn't necessarily deliver what we want for the money that we want at the time we want. So they'd invariably come out of a waterfall project really burnt, right? They didn't necessarily get everything they wanted. It cost way more than they had, and essentially an agency, which mostly they would go through an agency. The agency would have to separate themselves from the stakeholders for a period so that they could just get to doing the development without constant scope change or creep. So when you do one of those projects, you kind of, most of the businesses would be disinclined to revisit it next year.
Yeah. Right?
I've done it once. I don't want to go back there again.
No, no way.
We have introduced the idea of modern agile and iterative development to a couple of the divisions.
Has that been taken? Has it been a little bit of convincing?
It's a big culture shock.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Was it an educational piece, or how did you approach them and get them into trying that format?
Well, we have we're very fortunate to have a budget ourselves where we can go out and engage external agencies and consultants to help us drive workshops and education pieces. In some cases, we've funded prototypes of new web pages to the point where the business has been along for the ride of developing user stories and understanding the journeys that customers will have on the website. These are concepts that haven't actually been utilized at Village before, right? So you can imagine if you come from a position where some of the business leaders would have determined, you know, the functional and non-functional requirements of a new website.
Yeah.
and that was the way you always did it,
yep.
to now approaching it from the angle of the customer. You know,
yep.
it's the customer expecting when they're arriving at the site.
Yep.
What sort of personas can we identify over the course of a week that we can start building those stories again? Well, that's, you know, it's mind-blowing for them, but they come out of the process with something that we can demonstrate is, you know, is exponentially better than the old way. Plus, they're seeing, you know, iterative, demonstrable improvement to a prototype as we continue down the sprints.
In my experience, I've seen very similar things where we've worked with more traditional businesses used to big waterfall projects of 18 months for these monolithic systems, and we take them to the approach, and they love it, and they get on board. But the difficulty, and I don't want to harp on budgets, but it's when it comes to development, something that you alluded to at the very start, that this is something that you're going to have to continue to invest in for potentially small outlays over a longer time, as opposed to a big outlay up front. And that's been something that's I felt hard for businesses to change that perception. As opposed to let's get in there and let's from the customer's perspective, they've been very embracing of that perspective. But then when it comes to building a thing, it's been a bit more of a challenge. Have you seen a similar thing with?
Yeah, absolutely. Story of my life. No, we're not asking for any of the divisions to take a leap of faith with us,
yep.
right? This is a process that's is very well documented, and it's, you know, now global standards, really,
yep. when
we're talking about agile delivery.
Yep.
But we constantly get asked the question right at the very start, yeah, this is all well and good, but
how much
will the project cost again? Mm.
Yeah.
What do I need to budget for from the first year?
Yep.
My answer is always, what do you hope to spend? What do you have to spend, right? Because your budget will drive the change. Will drive how much we can actually achieve for you in the period that you've given us.
Yep.
So it is approaching it a different way.
Yeah, right? Very, very different, yeah. There's a few CFOs out there sort of cringing at that sort of thought.
Absolutely, yeah. Yep. The idea of a project team not being able to tell you how much something's going to cost you
yeah,
from the start.
Yeah.
I mean, we can come up with estimates, right?
Yeah,
I really
sure.
like to be able to say, we talk about time. So
yep.
My estimate is always time-based.
Correct, yeah.
Right? So it's going to be X amount of fortnightly sprints.
Yep.
You know, we would love to get 80% of our top PBIs down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there'll be gravy at the end. If we've got additional time, we can start looking at the priority two pieces.
Mm.
Or we might find halfway down the track that we need to pivot a little bit because you've had a great idea.
Yeah, right? And you want it in there as part of that first release. Yeah.
And that's what it's all about, like testing and learning and iterating and the whole part of it. And you want to put it in front of your customers to sort of get their feedback early on before you launch it commercially. So that agile method's going to work perfectly well. And especially when you've got such a large consumer base, it's such a large audience that you're marketing to. So you need to have that in place. Have you found that you've done a lot of that lean methodology of testing and learning and in your agile process?
Oh, on the subject of testing, absolutely. Testing for us has been a core part of our deliverable for the last 18 months, whether it be in our hypothesis formulation, the workshopping we do around those, that hypothesis generation. That essentially leads into an agile process. However, for us, we've been using it mostly for website optimization and multivariate tests, which have been exceptionally positive. In many cases, millions of dollars of potential uplift. And I say potential because it's monopoly money, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's you can't go to a CFO and say, we ran 8 tests this year and for a cumulative benefit of $5 million, because they'll say, whoa, hang on.
Yeah.
I can't see that $5
million. Yeah, it's not my balance sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The answer to that is when you come up with, when you do need to do some BA work around the measurement of uplift or the measurement of any form of change, then you engage the actual business unit's finance people, right? Have them write the formula that helps you demonstrate the uplift. Then when you take it to the CFO, you say, but actually it's your people's numbers, not ours.
Yeah, yeah. So what was your, I mean, it sounds like you're all on board the Agile train, which is fantastic. When did that sort of shift in perception change for you, or has it always been what you thought was the right way to approach these projects?
Well, I've headed up a PMO function at Village since about 2009, I think.
Yep.
By saying headed up a function, basically I drew up the methodology and the governance pieces around running a program office.
Mm-hmm.
When many of the projects were mostly large infrastructure pieces, so building a new DVD warehouse for Sydney or a theme park in the US, those sorts of big pieces.
Yeah.
The divisions themselves were still left to their own devices, engaging external agencies to work on a new waterfall web development project. Mm-hmm. And the poor IT department got the hot handball at the end of a project to say, now it's been built, could you support it?
Yeah.
So over in IT, I would say
they love you
constantly. IT really lacked any kind of chair at the table. They would hear about a project, say a website enhancement or even a brand new website, well down the path, right? So long after they could provide any influence and our IT department are fully agile. Everything's, you know, well trained. They have daily stand-ups and the pieces that they develop internally. So for me, there was benefit in seeing how IT struggled with that piece and how they struggled with engagement. Now, I think there was mention last time about how IT charges for its time and many corporations and the way they do charge back internally. Mm. Well, I think traditionally IT it's not an innovation department, right? Yep. It's actually a cost and efficiencies department.
Yep.
It's about centralizing the management procurement of technology by a central piece so that it costs less money.
And reduce risk and
right.
all that
reduce
stuff.
Risk, yep. ensure governance and, yep. and compliance to regulatory and law, right? So they're not the guys that you would invite to the table to help you start developing some user stories for a brand new website.
Yeah,
I hope the IT are listening right now because there's some creative guys sitting in the building thinking, I want to be part of that team.
Yeah. Right. It's always interesting to have that perspective there as well because
that's great.
They'll at least know the limitations that you're starting off with.
Yeah. One of the key things that we did when we formed the digital department was become advocates for IT to say these things can't kick off without one of the IT guys being around the table to lend some perspective about the constraints of the back-end technology and to make everyone aware of, you know, not to be a Debbie Downer at the table, right, but to at least be able to come back to IT afterwards and say, hey, these are all the neat things these guys are thinking about. Why don't we spend some time about thinking about how we can make them happen?
So we're almost out of time for this podcast, but I've got two more questions. So one of the other questions we raised in the last podcast was how has a digital department impacted the budgets of the other departments that sit around it. And we made our hypotheses of whether it took a little bit from marketing, a little bit from IT, and a little bit from the business units. Do you have a sense of how it's coexisting, or is business seeing that as this is a new expense that has to now support?
That's funny you should ask. One of the biggest challenges we had when we formed digital was that many of the CFOs from the divisions were saying, okay, you don't have a chargeback model, right? You're a corporate funded team.
Yep.
But that money's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah. The customers which you're trying to help, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
Look, the truth is we actually have been blessed by a corporate budget, right?
Okay.
We appreciate it. We think that without that, if we had to, go to a business unit or a division with all of these wonderful ideas that we've got and at the same time ask them to pay for our time, you know, then we would have got a bit of lip service.
Yep.
So very thankful that we haven't had that barrier of cost
okay.
in a way. And if anyone out there is listening and thinking of forming an internal innovation or digital team, I would counsel you to absolutely view the money you put into digital as basically R&D for your company.
Mm. Excellent. And the last and most important question is, do you have a favorite app?
Oh, wow.
Put you in the spot now.
Is it the
soon-to-be-developed Village Roadshow app?
Actually, we've got so many ideas on the table. Any one of them are going to be world-changing.
Yeah.
I'd probably say Reader because I'm a big RSS feeds guy. You know, I spend a lot of my time on the phone has to be, like most people, I think we spend 3 to 5 minutes on the phone at a time. With Reader, I can go through and read, you know, a dozen feeds or so, pick out my favorite articles and save them for later. When I'm not using Reader, it'd probably be a Reddit client like Alien Blue or, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, Jason, thank you so much for coming on and giving us the true picture of how this is all happening.
You're welcome.
Ruben and Rob, I hope that's cleared up some of our thoughts as well. Everyone who's listening at home, you can follow us for more information on Twitter at Outwear. Jason, do you have your own Twitter handle?
I do. You can find all of my social links on jasonodonnell.com.
And if any IT managers are out there wanting to give him his thoughts. You can tweet him on that as well. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll speak to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.